And now Medicare can use that power to go toe-to-toe with Big Pharma and negotiate lower drug prices. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. Much appreciated.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It's not bad today.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
For now.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, not to mention other fine terrestrial radio affiliates across this great nation in some 15 states, including California, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Hawaii, Ohio, New York, Louisiana, New Mexico, New Hampshire, Arkansas, Washington, Virginia, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. And then a whole bunch of streaming internet sites, including the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We have got a lot to get to, including a guest that I'm very much looking forward to speaking with, standing by. But let's start here as the Biden-Harris economy continued to soar on Thursday. The number of Americans filing new applications for unemployment benefits dropped, already near the lowest that number has been in decades. Well, it dropped again last week, with layoffs remaining historically low as new inflation data released this week saw year-over-year inflation drop to less than 3%. That's the lowest such rate for inflation in the post-pandemic industrialized world. The economy's resilience was also reinforced by more new data on Thursday showing retail sales increased by the most in 1.5 years in July, all of which led to another extraordinary rally on Wall Street, which has already been at or near record highs, with the Dow closing up more than 550 points on Thursday, marking the sixth time that the 30-stock average has moved more than 400 points in August alone. Wall Street saw similarly large or larger gains in the S&P and the NASDAQ, both of which just kind of exploded today and this week overall. And I'm not touting the success of Wall Street and the markets, but what they are responding to is excellent economic data. As a matter of fact, today I have a watch list of various stocks, pretty much all of the stocks and funds that I follow closely. Most of them, Des, you'll be, Desi Doyen, hi.
Hi.
You'll be shocked to learn are related to renewable energy and things, just to keep an eye on that.
But it's interesting that, you know, just a week ago there was that one day slip in the stock market, and I guess right-wing media must be disappointed that they didn't get the stock market crash.
Oh, they were very excited. They thought it was, yes, Donald Trump has been promising that 1929 style depression coming any moment, but they ain't getting it, at least not for now. Who knows what tomorrow will bring, but for now all of the stocks that I follow all exploded, except one stock on that list, just one, and that would be Donald Trump's media company, DJT, one of the few stocks to continue dropping this week. Now, by the way, at its all-time low since going public back in January, since then, it has lost 54% of its value, at least, which was all built on vibes, not on actual value, because the company doesn't do anything other than run Trump's dumb money-losing social media website. Anyone who bought into that scam at or near its high has now lost a full two-thirds of their investment. We tried to warn you. But other than that, Wall Street is not complaining after a day like Thursday, when even the healthcare sector and healthcare-related funds climbed to all-time highs. And I mention that because, oh, look, It all happened on the very same day that the Biden-Harris administration announced an historic achievement that pharmaceutical companies had long fought with the help of Republicans, as they all pretended that, you know, it would put pharmaceutical companies out of business or something. Well, apparently not. The White House on Thursday unveiled the fruits of months of negotiation between the government and pharmaceutical companies. New lower Medicare prices for 10 blockbuster drugs. The discounts range from 79% off for diabetes drug Januvia to 38% for blood cancer drug Imbruvica. In a press call ahead of the announcement, the Biden-Harris Secretary of Health and Human Services, Javier Becerra, said that if these negotiated prices were in effect last year, Medicare would have saved $6 billion and beneficiaries would have saved $1.5 billion in out-of-pocket costs, like copays at the pharmacy counter. The program selected the first 10 medicines for negotiation last year based on several conditions laid out in the Inflation Reduction Act. If you don't remember that one, it was a bill that was supported only by Democrats. Not one single Republican voted to end Medicare's 20-year statutory ban on negotiating drug prices for the American people, which had long been a goal of progressive lawmakers, a goal finally achieved under the Biden-Harris administration. The drugs included blockbuster blood thinner medicine, drugs for arthritis, cancer, diabetes, heart failure. In all, these 10 drugs alone cost Medicare more than $50 billion back in 2022, or about 20% of the program's gross total drug spending that year, according to HHS. They also cost beneficiaries $3.5 billion in out-of-pocket expenses. Remember all those times Republicans tell us that, we have to do something to save Medicare. We have to save costs somehow. Well, apparently they were against saving billions of dollars for Medicare. It's expected Medicare drug price negotiation will save the government almost $100 billion over a decade, according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, which scored the Inflation Reduction Act. Of course, saving the government money is the sort of thing that Republicans have long pretended to care about. But of course, when the rubber meets the road, they really couldn't care less about it, could they? They are interested in corporate profits, not taxpayer savings, as all of this demonstrates yet again. President Biden and Vice President Harris trumpeted the announcement at an event on Thursday at a community college in Maryland, where they gave remarks about lowering health care costs for Americans in their first formal joint speaking appearance since President Biden stepped aside from his bid for a second term and endorsed Harris last month. Here's a few of President Biden's remarks on Thursday.
We pay more for prescription drugs. It's not hyperbole. We pay more for prescription drugs than any advanced nation in the world. You know, the VA pays, as they should, 50% less than Medicare, because VA can negotiate the prices. But for years, Big Pharma blocked Medicare from negotiating lower drug prices. The consequence, they're able to maintain the exorbitant price increases and the profits are uncalled for. But this time, we finally beat Big Pharma. And I might add, with no help from Republicans, not a single Republican voted for this bill, period. Not one in the entire Congress. Now, the reason I say that is not to make a political point about them, not if they've gotten their lesson, but guess what? They want to, the guy we're running against, what's his name? Donald Dump or Donald whatever. They want to get rid of this, what we passed. They're fighting to get rid of what we've just passed. No, I'm serious. No help from Republicans passed the Inflation Reduction Act, thanks to the tie-breaking vote of Kamala, made it possible. Folks, it really matters. We can do that for child care and health care and so much more. We're just getting started. Under the law I signed, Medicare can negotiate lower prices for another 15 drugs next year, 15 the following, and 20 after that till every drug is covered. That's the law. Now. This is another really big deal. It means that Americans can save more money on from life-saving medications they need and deserve. You may have heard about the MAGA Republican Project 2025 plan. They want to repeal Medicare's power to negotiate drug prices. Let Big Pharma back to charging whatever they want. Let me tell you what our Project 2025 is. Beat the hell out of them. I mean it.
Seems like he's enjoying not running for office again. Maybe that's just me. I don't know.
No, I got that sense too watching it.
So while Democrats are celebrating a still booming economy and the success of yet another long sought progressive policy achievement, well, what's Donald Trump doing? He was in at his Bedminster, New Jersey country club, I think, on Thursday, where he again called one of these fake news conferences, this one to talk about how bad, wait for it, the economy is. And, of course, saying once again that we are on the verge of a 1929-style depression. He also said that more than 100% of the millions of jobs gained under the Biden-Harris administration went to immigrants. That's right. More than 100% of them.
Now, I'm no math whiz, but I'm pretty sure you can't do more than 100%. But, you know, we'll see.
Once again, you underestimate Donald Trump.
I underestimate Trump math.
There you go. What else was he doing? Well, as NPR reports in detail today, Team Trump is planning for, as he promised at his national convention in Milwaukee just a few short weeks ago, quote, the largest deportation operation in the history of our country, if reelected. That is a theme that he repeated again. He continues to repeat. He repeated again during his recent conversation with billionaire Elon Musk, who now devotes $45 million a month to get Trump reelected, and which NPR found through open records requests from the Trump's first term in the White House that he seems to want to do it somehow by contracting with the private prison companies that the Obama administration had parted ways with near the end of their administration. Somehow, Team Trump hopes to build massive detention centers large enough to round up and deport what they describe as tens of millions of immigrants, including many who have been here for years and are now married to U.S. citizens, have children that are all U.S. citizens, but they all got to go, even if they got to go door to door and basically violate the Posse Comitatus Act to have the National Guard start rounding up people, knocking on doors. In truth, Trump has no actual idea how to do any of that stuff that he is promising. So let's get back to reality and the wildly popular ideas from progressives, ideas that are actually working, that are actually in place, like negotiating for prescription drug prices and so much more than that. For example, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, now Kamala Harris's running mate, has been able to carry out a whole bunch of progressive ideas to get them passed to much approval in his state, where he has signed laws to protect abortion rights, legalize recreational marijuana, restrict gun access, provide legal refuge for trans youths, enact laws expanding paid family and medical leave, ban non-compete agreements, provide universal school meals, free public college for households earning less than $80,000 a year, and capping the price of insulin in Minnesota 3 years before President Biden did so nationally. A virtual laundry list of top progressive aims that progressives might like to see implemented nationally. And they're working hard towards doing that. In advance of next week's Democratic National Convention, a coalition of progressives are gathering in Chicago to discuss exactly that. So where are progressives and progressive activists right now amid this historical political upheaval over the past month? Let's take a quick break and we will come back with Alan Minsky, Executive Director of Progressive Democrats of America. He will join us next to discuss exactly that. Also, Desi Doyen's latest Green News report later.
If time.
Anyway, don't go away. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to the Bradcast. Do not touch that dial.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around.
Okay, great.
I love it.
I love it too. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. This year's Progressive Central Gathering, hosted by our friends at Progressive Democrats of America, or PDA, with a number of other progressive organizations and publications, is celebrating its 20th anniversary this weekend in, yup, Chicago, that toddlin' town, in advance of the Democratic National Party's 2024 convention set to begin on Monday and run through next week. PDA describes its Progressive Central 2024 as, quote, a unique opportunity for progressives to gather, discuss, and strategize on key policies and election strategies. But this year, they note at their ProgressiveCentral2024.com website, quote, it's not just a convention, it's a celebration of 20 years of relentless activism and a pivotal moment for the progressive movement. That movement, I should note, has quietly, really, made enormous gains in recent years, particularly under the Biden administration. After Joe Biden's team joined forces with folks from the 2016 presidential campaign of Vermont's independent U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders to form working groups to bring policies from Sanders' 2016 bid for the presidency into harmony with Biden's own plans for his administration. Many of the progressive policies that have been forwarded by the Biden White House are arguably the fruits of that coalition between progressive Democrats who supported Bernie Sanders in 2016 and more moderate institutionalists, such as those on Team Biden that year. At least that's what it seems to me. My guest joining us momentarily may have his own thoughts on that. But every year since 2004, during every Democratic National Convention year, PDA has brought together progressives in the DNC host city. This year, they say, they will be focusing on the critical role the progressive movement will play in the upcoming elections while celebrating two decades of impact. The group's two-day event on August 18 and 19, just before the start of the DNC, will, in fact, be keynoted this year by that same U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders and is set to feature a host of speakers, many of whom are from the Congressional Progressive Caucus, including Congressmembers Pramila Jayapal, Jamie Raskin, Barbara Lee, Raul Grijalva, Maxwell Frost, and many others, along with friends of ours like the nation's John Nichols and Free Speech for People founder John Bonifaz, and many others. In the group's press release announcing Sanders' keynote at the 20th anniversary gathering, PDA Executive Director Alan Minsky says, quote, there is a lot of misinformation about progressive politics, adding, Progressive Central 2024 is designed to set the record straight by showing that progressive politics match the needs of 21st century America. All of this, of course, comes on the heels of one of the most remarkable months, perhaps ever, in American politics in U.S. history, as a Democratic president with a wildly effective and, yes, progressive record of success, at least when it comes to policies, if not popularity in the polls, decided to step aside suddenly and endorse his own vice president, Kamala Harris, for the top of the Democratic ticket. After which she, in turn, named Tim Walz, Minnesota's popular two-term governor with a remarkably successful record of progressive achievements in the state, as her running mate. And as the Harris-Walz campaign has watched what may be an unprecedented surge in popularity for a U.S. presidential ticket in the bargain. All of that after a year of protests against the Biden-Harris administration by progressive elements of the left in protest of their support for Israel's far-right Benjamin Netanyahu's brutal war on Gaza in response to Hamas's horrific attack on Israel last year. Joining us now to get a read on all of this and where progressive activists now find themselves in the run-up to the Democratic National Convention at this extraordinary historical moment is my old friend Alan Minsky, who, before he became PDA's executive director several years ago, I should note, by way of full disclosure, served for many years as the longtime program director at our flagship affiliate station here in Los Angeles. That would be Pacifica Radio's KPFK. Oh, Mr. Minsky, it's delightful to have you back on the broadcast. Congrats on Progressive Central's 20th anniversary celebration, sir.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we're thrilled. And the organizing, you know, we even got going on a late start. We are hosted at probably the most prestigious location we could be hosted at for a progressive event in Chicago, at least in the proximity of the United Center, because tip of a hat to our partner, Rainbow Push, certainly an equally prestigious location within Chicago for progressives. But the Chicago Teachers Union, if people are familiar with Chicago politics, they'll know that the current mayor, Brandon Johnson, a few years ago was a middle school teacher and a CTU member, became a CTU activist, and that was set him on the pathway to his ascendancy to becoming mayor. And, you know, the realities of politics are such that, you know, CTU was going to be very cautious in terms of vetting who they were going to, you know, let have their venue for their event during this very particular time in Chicago political history.
Yeah.
Obviously, as you mentioned in your intro, your fantastic intro, that you know, there's a lot of course, issues that are controversial swirling around the orbit of progressive politics. And we were very proud that they are allowing us to use their facility. President Stacey Davis Gates of CTU will be speaking. Of course, we have an invitation out to Mayor Johnson, and we are hopeful that he will drop by, in particular at the closing plenary, which we think could be really spectacular. That would be after Bernie speaks. The hour, only hour of the conference left after Bernie speaks on Monday at 4 p.m. is the closing plenary. And so we're really excited by that. But we got a really late start because, of course, as I mentioned, a lot of controversy swirling around, and they, you know, they vetted us, and it's great that they did. And we have the venue, and the thing has come together spectacularly. And we have this incredible list of speakers. We have squad members, other progressive members of the caucus, Bernie Sanders, Senator Jeff Merkley as well has will be joining us now. We just Delia Ramirez and Jan Schakowsky have joined, two more Chicago progressive members of the House. I don't think would have been on the press release you saw there, because that just has all happened and come together. More progressive speakers joining every day, so exceeding our expectations. And there are still tickets available. You folks out there, you have to pre-register to attend for security reasons. And I mean, if it isn't sold out, but it should probably will, so register now at ProgressiveCentral2024.com, ProgressiveCentral2024.com, and reserve a ticket. No one's turned away for lack of funds. You have to pre-register to attend. By the way, Sanders is going to give a major, you know, talk. And this is almost certainly his primary appearance. I mean, he'll be at the DNC, I'm certain, at some point. But this is a primary lengthy presentation of the state of the world from Bernie Sanders' eyes at 2024 on Monday, a full hour dedicated to his keynote speech, introduced by Pramila Jayapal, by the way. And we're so thrilled. Yes.
And I think you guys are I think it'll be live streamed as well. No,
it will for the whole world to watch. Yes.
All right.
It will be through the easiest way to find it is PD America, Progressive Democrats of America's YouTube channel. Will stream it live. We'll have a Zoom for a little bit of interactivity where that's possible in between speakers. It's a packed show, and it's going to be incredible. And we've approached it as if the progressives had their own political convention.
Oh, if only that were the case, Alan. And by the way, the fact that it's coming together late, join the party. Apparently, that seems to be all the rage this year. Everything is coming together late at the last minute.
Yeah, wow. The last month, as you said, wow, what a turbulence, and then settling into something very dynamic right now in American Democratic history, but also high stakes.
Yeah, just a little. All right, so we got there's a whole lot of moving pieces going on, Alan.
Yeah.
Particularly for progressives right now. I mentioned a few of them in my intro. I think it's been both a very good and a very tough few years for progressives, including for high-profile elected progressives of late.
There's
going to be some squad members there at your gathering. But a couple of those progressive squad members have gotten turfed out during recent primary elections, theoretically, for their positions in opposition to Israel's brutal war in Gaza. But let's start, Alan, with some of that misinformation about progressive politics that you cited in your recent announcement.
Almost first and foremost at the top is as people can tell from our conversations, I will characterize you as, by the way, an exceptional journalist, but also I would deem you as the show is giving voice to progressives. So the show in general, I think, has something of a progressive texture to it, right? So we can use that term. Mm-hmm. Well, that the idea that the progressives, as people can tell from our conversation, we're just absolutely humorless. We're basically the Stalinist thought police. Yes. We will cancel anybody.
That's what
who
I've heard.
Even looks askew at the introduction of language that is unfamiliar to people. Uh-huh. And even if you come in not even understanding that, we're going to cast you out of the room and off the island.
Right.
And this is just simply not true. I travel in probably about as intense a set of progressive meetings, and people are relaxed. The humor flows, and no one is looking to, you know, basically banish even cis white males from any participation. And and I say even they're ironically. I mean, it's simply not the truth.
Right.
We are very much common people. In fact, a lot of the common Americans I know and I meet up with, and they're turned off by the political establishment. We can get into why that is and why we can't, you know, really just blame people for that. Yeah, but, you know, when I do talk to them about politics, I find one, they match up with progressive positions and feelings about the direction the society needs to go.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they're downright radical in their critique of American society. Are they turned off from the American political class? Yes. And that's actually right where we launch off at Progressive Central at the very top. So you mentioned John Bonifaz.
Yeah.
He will be talking about the role of the courts in staunching the agenda that Americans want. It's not just, I mean, clearly with abortion, people can see that, but also with democracy. But even so, we go all the way back to the Roosevelt administration with some of the things he was doing to try to, you know, restart the economy. And they had sort of administrative law to block that.
Yep.
That produced the conflict with Roosevelt and the courts. And now we could anticipate a progressive president gets elected. Progressive enough Congress is there, too, to push through something like Medicare for All. Yeah, the right-wing courts, as they stand right now, almost certainly would try to block that. And so we have to understand that. Now, that's down the road. The money in politics is right in front of us right now. We have someone from Public Citizen to bring all their expertise and framing on that issue at the top of the conference. And what is at the root of the crisis of American democracy that generates a Donald Trump? On the one hand, of course, the massive inequality of wealth, the power to buy the political system is there. When was the last time you met a person, an American, who would not concur with the statement that our political system is too corrupted by big money?
Well, listen, they agree with that. I mean, there's been this notion and a lot of money behind it into marginalizing progressives as out of step, as you said, angry, no sense of humor, but politically out of step with the American mainstream. And yet you see in, for example, what Tim Walz has done up in Minnesota, policy after policy after policy that are theoretically progressive policies, but they are also wildly popular policies. And there's been this sort of effort to push people like you, Alan Minsky, aside. Oh, you're a part of that radical left, when I actually think you're part of the radical middle at this point in this country. No?
Oh, no. Look at it this way. Progressive policies directly address the interests of the average household.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, first of all, you can look at it from a middle class, even upper middle class framework, of the blocks on the next generation proceeding into the economy and succeeding. And you can see four massive ticket items that just block people from achieving the American dream, which is about living a prosperous, middle-class, comfortable life with mm-hmm. vacation time. You don't have to work three jobs to make ends meet. These are big ticket costs, and I'll take them through 1, 2, 3, 4 through the course in the human life that you encounter them. Childcare, mm-hmm. overwhelming. It's almost prohibitively expensive to have a child in society, yeah. which is insane. Number two is, of course, the cost of higher education. Then you get out with a degree and you face housing costs, either rents or mortgages, both prohibitive for building anything like the kind of financial security that you want to have, at least a little buffer, right, to feel mm-hmm. secure in the society. And then finally, of course, healthcare costs overwhelmingly shredding the finances of people and families late in life, though that can't be met at any time in mm-hmm. life. And again, only progressives on all four fronts have clear policy solutions to each of those prohibitive yeah. costs that American families meet. And these are, again, practiced around the world in other countries. They're available for us to pursue. They're not radical ideas. They're common sense ideas. And then let's also look at this other thing that progressives are willing to address that the other groupings are not, because they just accept it as just there as part of the wallpaper of American society. And that's the clear spaces in society where there's deep endemic poverty. So the urban core, small and rural town America, deep mm-hmm. poverty in the indigenous communities, and still in the Southeast, the former mm-hmm. Confederate states, they're very much poorer still than pockets like Atlanta, not the case, but most of that region still yep. tremendously poor.
Yeah.
So again, only progressives address this. Now let's also turn it and look around it through different eyes. You're talking about lifting 100 million Americans out of poverty into the middle class through the progressive agenda. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What? How bad an investor and a capitalist do you have to be to not make money off that? How that would supercharge the greatest consumer economy the world has ever known?
Well, let me talk about not just the progressive ideas, but how to put those progressive ideas into action. We have seen a lot of action during the Biden administration, and even this week they're talking about this new deal they struck to. For decades, for the first time, they've been trying to negotiate pharmaceutical prices for Medicare. They've done it. They got it done, at least for the first 10 very popular drugs. But as I described in my introduction, after it became clear that Biden was going to be the Democratic nominee, Bernie Sanders and a progressive group came together with Team Biden for these working groups in several of these policy areas that you have just stepped through, to sort of help move the Biden campaign and the administration to the left. And it seems to me that those working coalitions have borne great outcomes in the Biden administration for progressives. It seems to me that working together, finding a way to come together, has yielded great success as opposed to just, separating ourselves, protesting, et cetera. Where does PDA sit on that broad spectrum of progressive politics?
Yes. What I would say is that the Biden administration represents a very important historic break, very much informed by the political logic of what you just described. By political, I mean this negotiation between the Sanders wing of the party mm-hmm. and the centrist wing of the party. And they made a very historic break with the orthodoxy of what people call economic neoliberalism, which has been the prevailing organizing of our economic life and mm-hmm. social life in the United States since Ronald Reagan's presidency. And you saw, first of all, Trump, by the way, Donald Trump, I hate to say this, contributed minorly to this along with break in trade policy. Well, the Biden administration and their negotiations in trade policy have been even better and continue with that break.
Mm-hmm.
But the more significant break, because don't forget, Trump was no break, really.
Mm-hmm.
When you just have a slight break on one wing of it, it's not the kind of break to happen. Where was the big break was on the utilization of fiscal policy through the large packages that were passed by Congress and signed by the White House in the first 2 years of the Biden term. This, again, it returns to the use of fiscal policy much more so than Obama did, because mm-hmm. Obama reverted right back to neoliberal orthodoxy mm-hmm. in his administration. And that's not a. And, you know, let me note for accuracy
that these many of these policies that were passed that you said by Congress were passed by Democrats and often Democrats.
Yes.
And love them or hate them, love or hate the Democratic Party, they're the ones who got these things pushed through. There was some work in coalition with some Republicans, but it was Joe Biden and the Democrats, and I think they need to get the credit due for it there. So proceed.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, one of the most important speeches I imagine is going to be given at Progressive Central by Representative Jim McGovern, why it's completely phony, this claim of the Republican Party to be the party of the working class.
Mm-hmm.
And McGovern's a perfect person to give that. His life's work has been all about mm-hmm. being a Democrat fighting for the working class. But yeah, so this break occurred. Now, here's the thing. The relationship of the progressive wing of the party to the ticket and then to what, you know, you can call the mainstream of the party. I'll go even this far as to say this. Coming into the 2020 cycle, I was arguing as the head of PDA that you had three different groups vying for political power in the country at that point. The progressives, who actually addressed the issues and concerns of the American people.
Mm-hmm.
On the left, on the right, you had the MAGA people. Mm-hmm. And in the middle, you had the neoliberal consensus between from the Romney wing of the Republican Party through the Clinton wing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that neoliberal wing of the Democratic Party has started to make that less of a sharp break with the progressives. You're absolutely correct in your analysis, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, though, I do think, and this is where progressives, I think progressives cannot be dogmatic in this manner. They have to convince and cajole and persuade a Harris-Waltz administration and their team of economic advisors that the way forward is to go further and look at those four big ticket items
mm-hmm.
and also look at programs that address. And this is a very tough one electorally. And this is where progressives have to have a backbone even for themselves, because we know that lifting up the middle class, those four big ticket items, mm-hmm. those being addressed, traditionally have been a winning hand in American Democratic small d politics. Serving poor communities is more difficult because of the level. I mean, as we all know, the richer you are, the more highly you're likely to vote.
Mm-hmm.
But again, addressing those entrenched pockets of poverty, which I think we can do, especially in a positive economic context. We can do it, by the way, the hardest time might be at a just sort of where you're floating, sort of an anxiety about the direction of the economy. But when you have a positive economy or a very negative, then people really fear falling into poverty. They're open to addressing poverty. But again, lifting up those Americans, don't forget, every other prosperous, industrialized, technological society in the world, and there are about 20 of them that are sort of on the same plane of wealth and technology as the United States, all of which, by the way, were our Cold War allies. That's a nice historic note,
mm-hmm.
Right? So they're Australia, New Zealand, East Asia, South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, Singapore, Western Europe, and Canada. All of those countries, right, none of them have this kind of deep, entrenched, endemic poverty, which means only the United States has a latent group of about 100 million people who can be lifted up by very understood mechanisms into the middle class. And when that happens, that is an economic boom.
Now,
it would be incredible to achieve it, but it is more difficult politically.
You need to push the Harris-Waltz ticket in that direction. Do you need to push them in that direction? Because it seems
Waltz, I think we can see there's the appetite there.
Uh-huh.
It's always just to be prepared with very courteous, as it were, persuasion and mm-hmm. argument and put forward our case.
Well,
right now, I don't think there's any reason on domestic policy to view the incoming ticket with any kind of sense that we can't achieve these things potentially, or at least make more progress in their direction in a real way in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me in the next few years that if the Harris-Waltz ticket is elected, that there are opportunities here that, sure, you know, we played a couple of times on this show. I don't have time to play it now, but AOC talking about, and this was back when Biden was running against Trump, talking
right.
about how, sure, she doesn't agree with all of Biden's policies, but she would rather organize against Joe Biden than organize against Donald Trump, that they actually have a chance to do so, to move a Biden administration or now a Harris administration, you're not going to move.
Right, I agree.
Yeah.
Can I interject an important point? From my point of view, here's the thing. A Harris-Waltz presidency failing to address, especially those four big ticket items.
Yeah.
Childcare, higher education costs, housing, probably the biggest one at this hour in American political consciousness, and healthcare. Mm-hmm. That, I'm sorry, it's going to not be a successful administration. We're at that hour in our economic and social history. Those things have to be addressed. A pathway to, quote unquote, the American dream has to be reopened. And an administration that achieves it will be a success. And that's part of the persuasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, my point, though, is that coming together to make that persuasion, to make that case, rather than traditionally, Alan, as you know as well as I do, progressives, mm-hmm. folks on the left have been at each other's, you know, throats.
Yes.
But we have seen lessons, it seems to me, recently, you know, leftist coalitions coming together in France, in Mexico, that you can actually accomplish a hell of a lot. And again, Sanders and Biden back in 2016, that you can actually accomplish something when you come together to do it rather than eating ourselves alive, which has been, I think, the case on the progressive left for too many years.
And let me agree to it as much as I will be willing to do in this interview, because it started out as I tried to push against, you know, caricatures of the left. Mm-hmm. That is one, though, Brad, I confess, sadly, has some legitimacy.
Yes.
We're not humorless. We're not really, there's no way en masse that the progressives are the Stalinist thought police like they think we are on Joe Rogan and Bill Maher and stuff like that. That's way over exaggerated.
Yep.
But the left infighting we have to get over, and that's on our plate. And the other big thing about the left is that these things are unachievable. They're unachievable for fiscal reasons. Well, they're not unachievable for fiscal reasons. They exist in almost all of those other countries.
Yep.
And you look at not the aggregate wealth indices. There's unbelievable aggregate wealth in the United States of America.
Yep.
And household balance sheets are larger, meaning they have more wealth capacity and effectively more assets than they do in those other countries, maybe exceptions, Switzerland, Norway. But, you know, it's because they have oil and, you know, whatever the legal banking system the Swiss get away with, mm-hmm. right? So the United States is potentially much wealthier. But if you look at social welfare indices, right, taking out the aggregate wealth components of those indices, so everything else, you know, how human beings are actually prospering or not in our society, the United States is either at the bottom, very close to the bottom, or way at the bottom on all those. Think about mass incarceration.
Yeah.
Think about violent gun deaths. Think about the level of depression that exists and that is, you know, people take pills for.
Yeah.
Think about the wealth inequality. Think about the cost of our healthcare and the generalized healthcare outcomes across the board. There's a lot for this society to improve upon. Americans don't want any of that to be characterizing this country. And herein, I love that Jimmy Raskin, as you know, there's a lot going on, and he's confirmed to try to participate in our program.
Good.
And we hope he will lead and open the program.
Yeah.
Because I actually have asked Raskin to talk about the American progressives. Progressivism and the country, the American left in the country,
mm-hmm.
to take back this idea of what we want that is good for our country, for a society that we can be proud in. And you can even use the P word here, patriotism. We cannot allow the right wing to own that.
No. And Alan, I got to get out here. And it's all very exciting. And all of the pieces that I hope are coming together for you guys in advance of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. I do need to ask. I've got really just a minute or so here. A coalition of groups are protesting U.S. cooperation with Israel and its war on Gaza. They're said to be preparing for what they claim will be 20,000 protesters near the venue, the United Center in Chicago. So, A, is PDA involved with that protest? And B, I know there's been a lot of worry among Democrats for some time that we might see protests akin to, you know, those which turned violent in 1968. Ironically, that was the last time a Democratic president, Lyndon Johnson in that case, had chosen to not run for another term in office. Do you have concerns about that? What are you hearing about the protests from the various groups and or seeing on the ground there in Chicago where you now are?
Well, I arrived yesterday, and it's been rainy since I've been here, and there was an event outside at Rainbow Push I was going to attend, but it was undercut by the rain, so I've been largely doing my work in my friend's house out mm-hmm. here in the West Side. And, PDA, of course, supports the ceasefire. PDA does support right now not sending any more weapons to Israel. Mm-hmm. And I'm confused by this offensive. But of course, we want Israel and all peoples to be able to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, just throwing in offensive weapons, I'm not quite sure what kind of weapons are offensive and defensive. So right now, in this hideous situation, you know, we take that position. And of course, I want, I'm Jewish self-identified. I want nothing but the welfare of all the people and families of the Middle East to be achieved. This has been a horror show.
Yep.
What has happened since October 7th and what Hamas did is, of course, a crime against humanity. And my interpretation of Hamas leadership and their understanding of the realities on the ground, they understood what the backlash was going to be. And I see them as having sacrificed the population of Gaza for their political ends. But Israel's response still to me, I think the United States going forward does have to commit to supporting the international criminal courts and courts of justice. You know, mm-hmm. these were largely set yeah. up by us.
Yeah.
So with all that means for the political, but also when horror like this happens, it isn't, it's terrible truth that it does create opportunity. And I think we have to be steadfast in holding to now we must move forward towards a situation where, I mean, look what brought about peace in the former Yugoslavia was eventually, and this is not my wish, my heart would wish it didn't have to be, but it is basically mutual deterrence between the two, the Croatians and the Serbians. So we need a Palestinian state mm-hmm. and we need Israel to be able to defend itself and mm-hmm. Palestine to be able to defend itself, and then to always push less stick, more carrot towards building prosperity for both societies. And if this is the horror show that produces it, it's what we can produce. We have to try to produce that out of this horror show.
And I will be.
So as for demonstrations and everybody, yeah, free speech society, open society, that's where I want to live. So yeah, people can do what they're going to do. The big demonstrations organized by ANSWR. PDA sometimes signs on to their demonstrations, sometimes not. We've been too busy to consider that right now, so it's not a shunning, or we're just not.
Well, as I said, as we started, everything is coming to short notice here. So we will see what happens next week with those protests and if or how.
By the way, I don't think it's right. Chicago doesn't feel like it's 1968. It just doesn't. There will be notable actions, and there will be notable actions, but I don't think as much passion as there is out there, I don't think it's quite broadly at the level of the what was going on in the country during the Vietnam War.
All right. Well, maybe we will bring you back next week to talk about whether you were right or wrong about that, Alan Minsky.
I would love to do that anytime with you, Brad.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you to Desi, too.
Always a delight speaking with you. You can find more on Progressive Central 2024 at ProgressiveCentral2024.com. You can find...
And get tickets. Reserve them now. They're going to go fast. They're going to be gone. You need a reservation to get in. Get them now. ProgressiveCentral2024.com.
There you go. Also, pdamerica.org. You can watch all of this on their YouTube channel at PD America, their YouTube channel. You can find Alan Minsky on the site, still known as Twitter, at Alan Minsky, I believe. Alan, a delight speaking with you. Good luck with the conference, and we will talk soon, my friend.
Thank you. Great talking with you, Brad. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Always great progressive geeking out.
Yes.
With Alan. Could have done it for an hour.
Yeah, and that whole live stream that they have planned, that's going to be super progressive geeking out.
Lots of progressives there. Should be very cool. All right, we got to take a quick break. We will come back with the progressive Desi Doyen and our latest Green News Report. That's straight ahead on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Desi Doyen, it's been about 24 hours since the last hurricane spun up, thanks to climate change fueled rapid intensification. Have we had any new storms in the past 24 hours?
No, not yet, but there's more on deck.
Oh, fantastic. As discussed in our latest Green
News report.
It took nearly a year to restore power to all residents. Today, the island's electric company faced a major test.
Tropical storm Ernesto slams into Puerto Rico, knocking out its electric grid again.
Taxpayers are paying a stiff price to protect high-end coastal communities.
Beach restoration projects protect wealthy homeowners at taxpayers' expense. Plus, U.S. Forest Service blocks bottled water company from taking California's mountain spring water.
Good. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You know, the biggest threat is not global warming, where the ocean's going to rise one-eighth of an inch over the next 400 years. You'll have more oceanfront property, right?
Wrong. You'll have less oceanfront property, you idiot. And it's not 1/8 of an inch over the next 400 years. It's 1 foot over the next 30 years. You'll be dead by then either way. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, don't even get me started on that dumb conversation between Donald Trump and Elon Musk, who knows better on all of this, yet he let the disgraced former president spout all sorts of stuff and nonsense on their boring two-hour conversation on Twitter.
Yeah, we'd play more of their conversation, but as veteran climate advocate Bill McKibben put it, their bizarre claims were, quote, the dumbest climate conversation of all time.
And that is saying something. Plus, haven't we all been through enough this year?
Yes, and I just want to add that scientists forecast as much as 7 feet of sea level rise before the end of this century, which would eliminate much of Florida.
Including Mar-a-Lago?
Yes.
Sad. What else you got for us today that's not stupid, Des?
Well, hot ocean waters helped power Hurricane Ernesto into a Category 1 hurricane in the Caribbean shortly after it battered Puerto Rico as a tropical storm. Puerto Rico escaped a direct hit from Ernesto, but the storm delivered at least 10 inches of rainfall and significant flooding that overwhelmed infrastructure. Its high winds damaged the island's fragile electric grid, which is still under repair from catastrophic Hurricane Maria back in 2017. Ernesto on Wednesday knocked out electricity for more than 700,000 customers. Mm. President Biden has approved an emergency declaration for Puerto Rico. Ernesto is now forecast to intensify to a powerful Category 3 storm before striking Bermuda and thereafter spinning out into the open Atlantic. Interestingly, while July 2024 just broke the record for the warmest month ever recorded globally, the record streak of hot temperatures across the world's oceans appears to have finally eased, according to NOAA this week. Record hot sea surface temperatures cooled off slightly in July, ending the 15-month streak of record warm oceans. But they're still plenty hot, disrupting marine ecosystems and fueling hurricanes and extreme rainfall. Storms this year have already caused extensive damage along the East Coast, including accelerating beach erosion. And taxpayers are on the hook to pay for the costs of restoring those beaches. Some beach restoration projects are deemed necessary to maintain habitat for threatened species and to protect infrastructure. But CBS News reports on the stark inequality of tens of millions of taxpayer dollars going to temporarily protect high-end beachfront homes, while inland, low-income communities are starved for investment and grappling with housing shortages. Professor Andy Coburn of Western Carolina University says beachfront homeowners should pay for those restoration costs.
There is inequitable distribution of benefits and costs.
Why are we spending public money to protect somebody's private, risky investment?
Why are we doing that?
Finally, a big victory for California's parched Angeles National Forest. The LA Times reports that the U.S. Forest Service has denied a permit to the company that sells Arrowhead bottled water and has ordered it to shut down pipelines and infrastructure that the company has used to draw hundreds of millions of gallons every year from springs in the San Bernardino Mountains, basically for free for nearly a century, which it then bottles and sells for profit. State officials already determined that the company has been unlawfully diverting much of the water without valid water rights. Residents hope the agency's decision will withstand a court battle and that it will end the 10-year fight to stop the company's extraction of water from the public's lands that they say has dramatically reduced creek flows and is causing significant environmental harm.
Good. You're welcome, Arrowhead. Now get lost. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Didn't want to see your face, your better disappear. The fire is in their eyes and the words are real.
Yes. Beat it, Arrowhead. We don't need you out here in our beautiful forest stealing our water as they've been doing for decades now for nothing.
Almost a century they have been doing this. They take the water for free. They pay $2,500 a year, and then they get the water for free.
$2,000 a year. Get the water for free. Sell it for $1 a bottle.
Or more.
Or more. You know what? They can go back to just taking it out of the crappy New York tap water like so many of those bottled water companies do.
Indeed. And, you know, this was all during California's historic drought that has deepened and is basically a mega drought.
All of that water for $2,000 a year.
Yes.
And creating, selling it all over the country.
And creating tons of plastic bottle waste.
Jerks. See ya. All right, gotta go. My thanks again to Alan Minsky, Executive Director of Progressive Democrats of America, and to Desi Doyen, our producer, and of course, mostly to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or just want to hear it again or share it with friends, families, and enemies, you can do so for free at bradblog.com. No paywall there. Let's help keep it that way by hitting one of them donate buttons if you don't mind. We could really use your support. Or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help support what we do and keep us on your public airwaves, at least throughout this election, which, by the way, could go on for a while.
True.
That's it. You can drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter. I am the Brad Blog.
And you can follow me, Desi, at Green News Report.
Yeah, bother her, not me. I gotta go. We gotta beat it. Thanks again. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Just beat it. Just beat it.